I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee, and members, we're still a little short of a quorum, so I just talked with the author, and of course we can't take up any amendments, including the author amendment, until we have a quorum. So what I thought, being that this is such a lengthy bill, while we're waiting for a quorum, we'll start by just giving those of us that are present an overview, and then as soon as we have a quorum, we're getting closer, we will then begin to take action on at least the author's amendment to get the bill in the form that he would like. So, Representative Huntley, if you'd like to begin by giving us an overview. And we're just too short.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, this is the Health and Human Services omnibus, that's what Mike Garros used to say, omnibus finance bill. And I can just tell you what the targets were that I was given. One is I had to make $150 million in cuts to the general fund over the or below the base. We were required to give a 2% COLA to nursing homes and long-term care facilities. And some of you may know, in my view, that we should, wherever possible, treat long-term care facilities and nursing homes the same, because the kind of one is for people with disabilities, the other is for seniors that are very elderly. And the workers in both places do roughly the same kind of work, so I always try to treat them the same. We were required by leadership to give 1% to the base, and there was a scheduled cut of 1.67% that was in last year's bill and to long-term care. And I was asked to get rid of that cut, so that's in this bill. So we're $150 million below the base in general fund spending. And how did we do that? First of all, we adopted many things from the governor's bill that were cuts. Practically everything the governor had that was a cut, we have adopted. We did do some of the things that he wanted, particularly in the mental health, and specifically for kids. We put a lot of things that cost money in there to do mental health for kids. We can, Mr. Berg will run through the bill, but where we raise money, and this is a controversial, we raise money with a surcharge on hospitals, and the reason we do that is that we can then use that surcharge to capture federal money, and then we give the surcharge back to the hospitals. The negative thing to that is that not all hospitals have the same medical assistance enrollment, and so that system, and while I think we have to do it, there will be winners and losers in the hospital system. If you have a high medical assistance rate at a particular hospital, then that one comes out ahead. If you happen to be a hospital that has a very low medical assistance rate, you're going to be a loser on that one. So that is not something I'm very happy with, but that's what we had to do. We also put a cap on the reserves in HMOs. And what we've done, in 2004, we passed a law that basically removed the upper amount of what HMOs could have in their reserves. What this bill does is go back to what we had in 2003 and says that, and my view is, what we had up to 2003 was working pretty well. I think the reserves are getting a little too high, so we're going to cut down their reserves. We can't take their money because it's their money. But we can tell them what they have to do with that extra reserve that they have to get rid of if we go from the 2004 law back to the 2003 law. And what we're requesting them to do is put that money into a separate account still run by the HMO and then use that to pay back. In the case if it was private insurance, they have to pay the reduced premiums to the private payers. And if that reserve came in part for medical assistance, then they have to pay part of the medical assistance bill. So those were the two sums. That was about $100 million, and the reserves was, we're getting about $67 million and 48
in the first two years.
And part of that money that the HMOs are going to pay goes to our share, and part of it goes to the federal share. So we don't get all the money they're going to have to pay back. The feds get a proportion of it. And so I think those are sort of the highlights of the bill, and I would let
this is just a good Berg. Point. We've had a quorum for some time, but I didn't want to interrupt interrupt you when you were doing the overview. So why don't we take care of a little committee business first. We'll just take a little break here and begin with the minutes of the April the 16th meeting, and Representative Dabney moves their approval. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Maybe before Mr. Berg begins, there's a couple of amendments here that are the author's amendments, and I assume that would get the bill in the form that you'd like. Would you like to take those amendments up now? To get the bill in its appropriate form, and then we can talk after that about when you'll take the other amendments.
So the first author's amendment is the A93, and
we need to move the bill first of all.
Okay, I would move the House File 1233 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
That's correct. Yeah. So Representative Huntley moves that House File 1233, first engrossment, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. And that motion is now before us. Representative Huntley then moves the A93 amendment, the author's amendment. Representative Huntley.
And I have an amendment to that amendment, and that's to delete lines 3.9 to 7.22. And delete lines 8.28 to 13.24. This was a section of the bill, two sections, but they relate to the same thing, and it has to do with disqualifications for various Health and Human Services jobs. If somebody has a felony degree, and what we were trying to do is allow people that got those felony convictions when they were juveniles to basically, if the commissioner agreed to not enforce those, we're taking that out of the bill, so it would no longer be in the bill with my amendment to the amendment.
Representative Huntley, you can just incorporate that into your amendment.
Okay, so I would incorporate that into the author's amendment, and then, Mr. Chair, there's a number of things in this amendment to the bill that first part modifies the definition of the Affordable Care Act to match the definition in other bills in the legislature. There's a section that clarifies the definition of clinics owned by a nonprofit corporation that qualify as critical access dental providers. There's some debate over that language, but what it does, it says that if you're a clinic or a health system that has a whole bunch of clinics, and one or two or three of those clinics qualify for critical access for dental care, that only those clinics and the dollars that they would generate by the current formula go to that health system, not their entire MA coverage. The third one inserts the percentage increase in basic care for outpatient payments for children's and other hospitals. It reduces aggregate spending for those hospitals. It removes section related to modifying priorities of spending forecast surpluses. So we had something in the bill that tried to tell HMOs that they had to hold their rates constant, basically, and that we're removing that from the bill because we don't think it would work. There's a section that modifies per bed amounts for ICF DD surcharge that's supported by both the department and by the ICF DD operators.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, I guess Representative Abler wants to know what page we're on.
Well, we could just help us with what page we're on.
I'll give you the line numbers again.
Thank you.
And other questions, I want to give the author a chance to go through
them. Okay, the last one, the ICFDDs, is line 1.15. The next one is lines 1.16 and 1.27 of the author's amendment allows a boarding care facility in Hennepin County to qualify for a nursing facility moratorium exception funding for an elevator upgrade. And this is, what, $3,000? $3,400. Lines 2.1 to 2.15 modify the nursing facility level of care report language to make it cost neutral. Lines 2.16 to 3.8 add language requiring the Commissioner of Human Services to work with the existing advisory groups to develop recommendations for home and community-based services. Lines 7.23 to 8.27 specify criteria for when a health carrier may elect to discontinue health plan coverage in the individual market. That is not contrary. If they have a product that they're offering or they wish to get out of the individual market, they can do that with this language. It was unclear whether they could do that without this language. Lines 13.25 to 13.30, cleanup language related to the Homeless Youth Act. Lines 13.31 to 13.35 affect, it delays the implementation of a law that was passed last year or the year before that relates to child care facilities. This is from Representative Clark, and it relates to some ethnic groups that are having trouble with that implementation of that, and so this would delay that implementation. Let's see. Lines 14.1 to 14.7 makes completely technical changes to the section on income and asset exclusions for individuals in the Family Independence Demonstration Project. Is that the Citizens Aid?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, and it's a very small project. I think there's only 12 families involved. Lines 14.8 to 14.2 adds language limiting penalties for late or non-submission of nursing facility rate mix assessments. And lines 14.31 make changes in the statewide health improvement program. Lines 14.32 to 14.34 and 15.1 to 15.22 and 15.33 to 15.36 are strictly technical changes to the appropriation article so that the article matches the spreadsheet. And lines 15.23 to 15.32 adds some funding for food shelf programs. And that's $25,000 a year. And line 16.1 to 16.4 are technical changes, again, to match the spreadsheet. The rest of the amendment relates to the state health improvement program, and it adds a $5 million increase from the healthcare access fund in the second year and directs MDH to issue pilot grants, some of which should be for people over 60. It's quite clear nationally that if we do health improvement plans for people getting close to retirement, that we can greatly save a lot of money in the long run. That also, that $5 million gets us back about to where we were with the state health improvement plan when it first passed. I think that was $47 million for the biennium. So that's the amendment, and that gets the bill in the shape that I think we need it in.
Okay, and Representative Holberg on the amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Huntley, could you go through your amendment to the amendment, your deletion of what's coming out again?
This was a section that related to, and I supported it. We all do a lot of stupid things when we're 16, and some of us get caught and some of us don't. And what I was trying to, or what this bill did was say that if these individuals who are now maybe in their mid-20s are applying for jobs, let's say they work in a nursing home, if they have a felony on their record, they would not be allowed to do that according to current law. This would allow them to go to the this section would have allowed them to go to the Commissioner of Human Services and basically have that their juvenile record set aside. I just would prefer not to have it in the bill. I think it's too controversial. I think it's a good idea, but I just think it's very controversial.
And Representative Holder.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, I'm very aware of how controversial it is. I don't believe it ever went to the Civil Law Committee with the Chapter 13 stuff in it. But would you again tell us the line and page numbers that you are deleting out of the A93 amendment?
Oh. Representative Huntley.
Could staff do that?
Sullivan. Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, the Huntley Amendment deleted on page 3, lines 9 through 36, so the change to 13.46 subdivision 4 licensing data, that would come out. That section continues on pages 4 and 5, so those are deleted as well, as is page 6 and page 7, lines 1 through 22. And then the author's amendment to the amendment deleted three additional sections on page 8, starting on line 28. That's section 5, initiation of background study by an individual. Those lines are deleted, 28 through 35, as are all of page 9, so the rest of that section 5, as well as section 6. The rest of section 6 on page 10, and also deleted section 7, so all of page 10. All of page 11, all of page 12 is deleted, so the end of 7 and the beginning of 8, scope of set aside, that's all deleted. And then on page 13, lines 1 through 24 were deleted.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert. Representative Abler?
No, I actually, we are for questions to the bill.
No, we're on the amendment.
Okay, yeah.
We haven't adopted it yet.
I had two comments.
That must have been when your hand was up earlier.
I was just trying to ask about the line and page thing, but I do have a couple comments. Just so members understand, thank you, Mr. Chair, and early in the amendment there was talk about critical access dental, and this was discussed in the committee, but in some cases we're taking money from one group and giving it to another. This is a case of money is coming from Health Partners Critical Access Program and going to the statewide critical access program. Now, arguably, the statewide program is in pretty disarray, and it's pretty small. But just so members know, when they're voting for the bill, they're voting to take it from somebody and give it to somebody else. And Representative Huntley, is the answer about why $45 million for a ship is that you couldn't get 50? Is that the... Because I see it's $5 million higher than it was in the committee from the Healthcare Access Fund.
Representative Huntley.
Yes, that was, I think, an amendment that was put on in... last Friday, I believe.
He took 5 minutes.
Do we put the extra 5 in here? Okay, here. Yeah, that's in here. This is something Representative Loeffler wants.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if I want $5 million, can I have Representative Loeffler ask you for that for me too? Then, thank you.
Now, just so everybody's clear, because we've had some folks coming and going, the amendment that was just talked about was incorporated in, by the author into his amendment. So right. What we're voting on then is the amendment with that incorporated. So any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor of the adoption of the A93 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carried. Representative Huntley, there's another amendment that I have designated as an author's amendment.
That's the one with the premium subsidy, Mr. Chair?
That's right.
Okay, I think you all have a copy of this, and that just deletes a section of the bill that had a blank appropriation because we couldn't fund that, so that section should be removed from the bill.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm not even sure we know what amendment we're talking about here.
It's the one that says it begins with premium subsidy at the top. It doesn't have a number on it. It's just we distributed it because people so they could see it, but it's a deletion. And as he just explained, there was no funding. It's a blank appropriation, and we don't pass out blank appropriations, so that's why we're deleting it.
And, Mr. Chair, I understand that I've gotten a lot of emails on the autism funding for the autism program, and you obviously were thinking about it, at least in some form, for a while, having a placeholder in the bill. Is there any funding in the rest of the bill for other programs or mandates or insurance or...
We're removing this part, but Representative Norton made an amendment last Friday that got into the bill, and that included parts of what the governor had for autism and parts of her bill. And so, and in fact, she's the one that brought me this amendment. She does think we should get rid of this. Section, but there is certainly money in the bill for autism and a regulation of insurance for the ABA, whatever the ABA is. That's good. Yeah, but there's no general insurance mandate. But what she amended into the bill is still in there, except for this section, which she wants out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And by the way, we just made a decision so that everybody knows how this is going to be identified. I checked with Mr. Marks, and he suggested we just simply call this the A999 amendment. So we're getting to the number. Thank you, Mr. Marks. Okay, Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just to the members about the autism thing. If there's ever been a placeholder in a bill, that would be the autism section right now. It's kind of half the governor's and half of an insurance mandate. And I don't think anybody would vote for it the way it is now, but it's at least this gives the purpose, I think, of the current, this was an effort to try to find some money to subsidize a very high premium in the bill for the people that want to buy a commercial product. And so what the House is saying is that we really care and we hope we can solve this somehow. There's $12 million, I think, in the bill for people, medical assistance and private insurance, and it's when it comes, and I don't know if there'll be something ready for the floor from Representative Norton, but she's working very hard on this, trying to make something go of this topic. It's been very difficult, and I, at least by coming out of conference, it'll be either fixed or blown up, but that would be my, and I think if you're trying to help solve it, this is a good start to adopt the amendment and then let Representative Norton work on it some more. So.
Okay, any further discussion? No. Seeing none, then, all those in favor of, Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I missed part of this discussion, so, but I understand, this looks like it will make it easier for people who have insurance already to get assistance. Is that correct?
Representative Abler?
Well, thank you. Representative Clark, actually, this is taking the subsidy provision out of the bill. Representative Norton was trying to find a way to fund it in the committee and offered this as a placeholder. And since she can't put any money into the blank, it has to come out.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark.
So this appears to put money in.
No,
it's blank. Okay, so the blank means that it's taking it out. Mr. Chairman, I haven't quite seen this strategy before. Maybe you could explain a little.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Abler, you want to explain it? We're deleting this section.
Yeah, actually, if you just look at the bill, this actually just writes up what was offered to put into the bill. The more appropriate amendment would be line 494.9 to 494.23. Delete the whole section,
okay.
It's just taking it out.
All right. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess. That's fine. I understand now what this is mechanically doing. And I guess my only question, maybe it's not for this amendment then, but it's related to it, which is what are we doing for those who are on medical assistance? And I understand there's a strong effort to try to make it equal. Like maybe this moves us in that direction.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm the spokesman for Representative Norton. I am a co-author on her bill. This is, maybe you weren't here, but this is not ready for prime time. There's $12 million in the bill, and she's trying to find a way to get some private insurance people in along with the public programs. I think at this point, neither is satisfactory. And maybe with some Senate magic, I hate to even use that as a wishful thing, and the process, it'll come into a program that people will be proud to vote for. So it's a little rocky just yet.
Thank you.
Is everybody clear then that this is a deletion amendment and it's now the A999 amendment? Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. That's the end of the author's amendments, I think, right, Representative Huntley?
I think one more, but we can, I think, go to Doug Berg now.
Okay, then we'll explain we'll have Mr. Berg explain the bill, and then we'll revert back to the other amendments. Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Doug Berg with the House Fiscal Staff. I'm going to start to just orient members to there's a sizable amount of information in your packets, and I believe you should all have five spreadsheets. The main one that we will work off, at least initially, is titled 2013 Session Budget Proposal Tracking, House File 1233 as passed, Health and Human Services Finance. Just so you know, there is also one labeled in the upper right-hand corner. The title of it is No 2020 Ways and Means, and in the middle it says Tab 4. That shows all the appropriations in the bill. The first one shows the changes. There is a single-page legal size sheet which tracks the general fund appropriations back to the forecast and to 12-13 appropriations and to the target. There are two letter-size spreadsheets, one of which is the Article 15 contingent appropriations, which I'll talk about in a bit, and then there's a letter size one that looks at the fees and surcharges that are in the bill. As I said, I'll start with the one that's labeled 1233 as passed, Health and Human Services Finance, which looks at the changes to the bill. And Mr. Chairman, you'll have to tell me how much detail you want. I'll start by just going over the first page and orient members to the right-hand six columns under where it says House are the House proposal. If you look at line 7, you will be able to see, as Chairman Huntley mentioned, under the 1415 line, that the bill comes in at $150 million below base. That number is net of spending changes and revenue changes. And it comes in $150 million below base in the tails of 1617 as well. Moving down the summary page, if you look on line 22 under fiscal year 15, you'll see this bill leaves a remaining balance in the healthcare access fund of $12.5 million and actually spends about $293 million, although that's a little deceptive because there are transfers involved there. If you go down to line 28, you'll see that there is a zero balance in the TANF fund at the end of 2015. And then going down to line 37, where the summary for the Department of Human Services is, on line 38, you'll see the changes, net general fund changes to the Department of Human Services are negative $155.5 million. If you go down to line 48 on the health department, you'll see that their changes are general fund changes are a net increase of $5.1 million. And moving over to page 2, there are some relatively small changes at the health-related boards that are in the state government special revenue fund on page on line 56. There's about $1 million worth of increased costs there, but those are fee supported in the special revenue fund. And then some very modest changes to the EMS board, the Council on Disabilities, the Ombudsman for Mental Health, and the Ombudsman for Families. And Mr. Chair, if you want, I guess I will go over the change items.
Approach it with a bill this size, and people have the spreadsheets if they have questions of something that you don't go over.
All right, Mr. Chair and members, continuing on page 2 on line 84, you start the change items with the Department of Human Services. There are two on page 2. They're both related to the Affordable Care Act, the first being the eligibility and enrollment changes that we're required to make because of changes in federal law, and the second one being an expansion of medical assistance to maintain coverage for pregnant women and children up to age 20 to 275% of the federal poverty level. Moving to page 3, on line 102, we picked up the governor's initiative to continue to fund emergency medical assistance coverage for cancer and dialysis patients. Just below line 106, an unnumbered line is the base adjustment of 1% for the Department of Human Services. That's 1% each year. Moving on to page 4, I guess I would highlight about the middle of the page, there's an item labeled Congregate Living Rates Modified. This is an item a lot of members have been interested in. The 2011 bill reduced congregate living rates, and there's been quite a bit of concern that that did not handle particularly mental health situations well. This would restore those rates for congregate situations where they received a mental health designation. Just below that is titled Limit Statutory MCO Trend Caps. This is the in statute, the managed care organizations. There are statutory trend caps that list how much the percentage increases in managed care population increases by group can go up. We've limited those in statute, and it saves about $20 million. Below that, we have an item that Representative Loeffler has worked a great deal on that changes the federal laws changed. Inmates were not eligible for medical assistance previously, and a year or two ago, the federal law on that changed. This item picks up the cost of medical assistance from corrections and from the counties for inpatient medical services. It gets the federal match on that, And in this case, it costs nothing at DHS because then corrections would make a transfer to DHS from the savings they realize in the same amount as the state share of the MA costs. So we get federal money, corrections loses their costs for this, so do the counties, and it doesn't cost anything at DHS. The bottom of page 4, an item that a lot of members are interested in, this bill repeals the MFIP family cap. Moving on to page 5, at the top, the bill restores the 25-day child care absent day standard that was in place prior to fiscal 12. The next item is the nursing home increase that Representative Huntley mentioned that increases nursing home rates by 2% in fiscal 14. And below that is a matching 2% increase to the home and community-based service providers. On the lower part of page 5, you have the ICFDD surcharge that Representative Huntley mentioned, and then the hospital surcharge. And the last item on page 5 is the cap on HMO reserves, which is returning to the 2004 risk-based corridor language and would cause the HMOs to spend down excess reserves. Moving to page 6 at the top is the restoration of PMAP MERC funds to the level they were at prior to 2012. Just below that on an unnumbered line is a rate increase for MA dental services is an item that a lot of members have been interested in. Moving to page 7 at the top, this is the autism initiative, and I would just mention that the governor's initiative spends $12.7 million, and that's the number the House is carrying. As Representative Abler and Representative Huntley mentioned, Representative Norton's bill, there's kind of a hybrid of her language is in this bill. The department's still doing work on the fiscal aspects of that. Representative Norton has publicly committed last Friday to work her benefit to fit within the governor's number. So that's the number we're carrying at this point, but as was mentioned, there's some work to be done on that to make it function and to make it functional. Moving on to Mr. Chair, I guess I would maybe move all the way to page 9 and highlight some of the mental health stuff on the line 615. There's an expansion of the School Link grants, which is a mental health initiative. There is also on the bottom of that page is the governor's initiative to establish a family psychoeducation benefit and medical assistance that doesn't actually cost anything but helps with mental health issues. Moving on to page 10, there is on line 631 an expansion of mental health crisis response services. The next two items are also mental health items the governor proposed that we are picking up, which actually change the funding within the mental health system and improve it, but don't actually end up costing any general fund dollars. Moving down to line 654, I'd highlight that we have a one-time reduction in the chemical the consolidated chemical dependency treatment fund, which had built up a carry forward of about $18 million, $18.2 million. The governor cancels that to the general fund, and we do as well. At the bottom of that page, an item that has some controversy, there's savings based on language which increases the county's share of the cost for placements at the Anoka Regional Treatment Center and at the Minnesota Security Hospital in St. Peter.
I think nobody's sitting
here.
Mr.
Chair? Yeah, if I could just say the reason for those two is that we're trying to get counties to encourage them to develop facilities in their own counties where these people can be transferred out of the regional treatment center or to the security hospital and housed in smaller units back close to where their homes are. The county does not have any of those facilities. This is to encourage them to make sure that those kinds of facilities get built in their own counties.
We'll put the book there.
Mr. Chairman, members, moving on to page 11, I would note on line 677, this bill includes the $7.8 million increase to fund projected increased growth in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. Moving on to page 12, at the bottom of the page, this is another ACA issue, the Affordable Care Act. This is the section that changes the Minnesota Care program into, it's labeled as New Minnesota Care. Other people will have heard about it, talked about as what will become the state's basic health plan. To describe it very broadly, in the future, this program will Minnesota MA will handle up to 138% of federal poverty level in most cases, although it will go up to 275 under this bill for pregnant women and children up to age 20. Then, under the new Minnesota Care program, at 139% of poverty, that would kick in and it would carry up to about 200%. And above 200% would then be in the exchange, getting insurance in the exchange and premium subsidy, a tax subsidy for that. There's also, as part of the governor's initiative, there is a shifting of the cost of some of the general fund MA populations to the healthcare access fund, since the effect of the MA and Minnesota Care changes are that there are greater MA costs and the healthcare access fund piles up savings over time because there are lesser draws on the healthcare access fund. Mm-hmm. The governor shifts some of the MA populations over to be paid for out of the healthcare access fund. The House bill does more of that in the tails as well. It does the governor's in the current biennium and more in the tails. Mr. Chair, moving on to...
Mr. Chair and members, that the new Minnesota Care program, as Mr. Berg said, goes from 138 to about 200% of poverty, but it also gets rid of the $10,000 hospital cap that we have in Minnesota Care and matches up some other requirements of medical assistance eligibility with the Minnesota Care, so it's starting to become a seamless program, and people would be treated the same whether they're on medical assistance or on Minnesota Care.
Mr. Chair, members, moving on to page 13, I would just highlight here on line 799 an item that's come up multiple years in a row, is the Wilmer community-based health hospital, which has been scheduled to close several times. This bill continues it again, and in this case, it's a permanent continuation. The department and the governor now want that facility to be open permanently, and this would do that. On page 14, on line 18, I note Chairman Huntley mentioned the repeal of the last 6 months of the 1.67% long-term care provider rate reduction, which was scheduled to kick in this July 1st and continue till December 31st of this year. This bill would repeal that six-month cut. And then very briefly, Mr. Chair, the Department of Health starts on the middle of that page. We have funded their core public health activities initiative, which costs $2 million. On the unnumbered lines, it has the same heading twice. It says increase core public health activities a second time. The second heading should read newborn screening fee hearing test. That's a bill that Representative Lane had, which uses part of the screening fee for a hearing test. at the bottom of that page, you'll see the Safe Harbor Bill, which is Representative Allen's bill to start trying to deal with sex trafficking issues and victims of sex trafficking. The very bottom of that page, you'll see the costs of the nurse staffing study bill that was debated today on the floor. And, Mr. Chair, I think that's where I would stop, unless there are questions on the changes. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Chairman Huntley reminded me I should mention the SHIP funding at the Department of Health, which is now $45 million of healthcare access funds, which are on page
15
at, on line 1198. And that the governor funded that at $40 million, and this bill funds it at $45 million. And that's healthcare access funds.
Okay, Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley, the MA eligibility for inmates in our prisons, I think that's a $2,600,000 transfer.
No. It's,
that's on page 4. Two questions. A, I thought that there was more savings than $2 million, and if there are, is it elsewhere in your budget? And then B, I'm just wondering why this never came to the Public Safety Committee, and why these savings weren't incorporated in the corrections budget.
Mr. Chairman, I can explain the technical aspects to it, and Representative Paymar. The cost of this initiative on the spreadsheet, you'll see it adds to zero, but the fiscal impact of it over 2 years is $2.7 million. The way it works here is the cost, the MA cost of corrections inmates and county inmates that are for inpatient and they have to be otherwise MA eligible, those costs would add up to $2.7 million according to the department and the counties, or, well, to DHS that's doing the analysis on this. The corrections department would transfer $2.7 million to DHS so that there's no net cost at DHS. However, that's all that's on this sheet is the picking up of the state share of the MA costs. Corrections would realize an additional, I believe it's about $5 million in savings above this, which is not counted here. It would be accrued to, if nothing else happened, it would simply accrue to the Department of Corrections, and also the counties would receive savings as well. This only books the cost of the MA, the state share of the MA cost, and then has corrections transfer a portion of their savings to cover it at DHS.
Thank you.
Representative Abler.
Well, just to that point, so you didn't know you had $5 million, or is that, can we still steal that from you before you realize it?
Chair, that's why I was wondering why, I thought it was more, so obviously Corrections has a $5 million savings in their budget, if I understand Mr. Berg correctly.
Mr. Chair, so is that been accounted for in the corrections budget? It looks like not if the chair doesn't know about it, Mr. Chair.
Well, I assume that it's because of the action here that was created, so I...
Mr. Chair,
I don't think it's been accounted for at this point because this bill is just now coming with that change. Anything to add, Director Lundley?
Well, Mr. Chair, I sort of remember it was around $6 million, but apparently it's gone down over the years, and And Representative Paymire, maybe you could use some of that $5 million for sex trafficking people and training cops on how to deal with that.
Chair, Representative Huntley, I think there's significant uses for it. I just wanted to make sure that was we were talking about the same numbers and we are, and we will account for it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abel.
I would expect in the meantime it's parked in the Ways and Means Chair's flexible pot of money. So.
That bottom line that everybody's
Yeah, your personal bottom line, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions, Representative Paymar, on that?
No, thank you.
Okay. Any more questions on this spreadsheet before Mr. Berg goes to the next one? Okay, let's go to the next one then, Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, you'll have to tell me what amount of information you want. The large spreadsheet labeled tab 4 I only put out so that members can look and see. This shows the total appropriations. The one I just went through shows changes in appropriations. The only thing I'll mention on the tab 4 spreadsheet, if you look at under the house columns on the right-hand side on the front summary page at the very top, lines 6 through 14, you will see by fund the total expenditures of this bill, which are $13.3 billion, all funds. And unless there are questions, that's all I would go through on that spreadsheet.
Any questions on that? Okay, Mr. Berg.
And Mr. Chair, I should go over there are two funding articles in this bill, Article 14 we just went through. Members should have a letter size spreadsheet which is labeled 2013 session budget proposal tracking, and the file name on the right hand side says 2020 supplemental. Some members will know from the governor's proposal that there is a package called Reform 2020 that the governor and the department have brought forward. It has to do with a waiver request to the federal government on the alternative care program and then a series of changes to the way long-term care would be handled in the state. So there's a separate Article 15, that would make these appropriations changes in the event we receive the waiver from the federal government. If you look at the top of the page, you'll see that in 14 and 15, the net effect of those appropriations is zero on the budget, because we would be getting federal revenue if we get the waiver, which would trigger a series of appropriations, but only if we get the waiver. And then the federal savings would pay for or offset the changes in appropriations. So there's no cost in the next 2 years if this happens, and there similarly is no negative effect if it does not happen. If it does, however, you'll note that in the out years it would have an effect of saving $58 million for the state in 16 and 17 if this occurs. And again, there's a effective date section in the bill that makes all of these changes contingent on our receiving the federal waiver first. And unless there are questions, I would move on to, there's a single page legal size spreadsheet which is just meant to show the general fund appropriations in the format that they are tracked in the general fund, and it compares the funding in this bill to the February forecast and to 12, the last biennium. And at the bottom, you can see there's a calculation which reconciles this bill to its Ways and Means target. And Mr. Chair, unless there are other questions, that's all I would have to present.
And I think you're right on the target.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Berg? We think we're learning that this is one of the more complex bills that we deal with. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me if there's any concessions or adjustments in your bill to address possible implications of sequestration and its effect of state funding of programs under your jurisdiction?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, no, there are not. There was some discussion in committee that there may be some need to do that down the road, but there is nothing in this bill that directly replaces sequestered federal funds.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Holberg.
If you know, do you have any idea what the level of exposure might be or the dollar amount of reduced federal funding in this area of the state budget that we might have to react to at some point down the line?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, off the top of my head, I don't remember. We did have some testimony from both Department of Human Services and the Health Department on this. I will say the exposure is much greater at the Health Department as a percentage of what they do. Department of Human Services, of course, has huge federal funds, but most of those are exempt from the sequester. But Department of Health has a lot of stuff. I mean, majority of their budget is funded with federal funds, and a lot of it is not exempt from the sequester. But I would have to either we would have to have the department comment, or I'd have to get back to you with more specific numbers. I don't have them off the top of my head.
Representative Huntley, you'd
Mr. Greenman is here from the Department of Health. To I don't know if you have questions for him, he could answer them. Mm-hmm.
Representative Holberg, do you want to hear from the department?
Mr. Chairman, it was my recollection that this was, as we've had this discussion in various areas, it was pointed out that the Department of Health probably had big problems on their hands if these issues weren't resolved at a federal level, and I was just curious whether or not this omnibus bill addressed that in any way, shape, or form, but I don't think that it does. So.
Okay.
Like maybe Mr. Koppel, yeah. Maybe Mr. Koppel's coming down. No, oh, he's sneaking out. Oh no, maybe not.
Providing the author of the bill and the chair of Human Services with some information, apparently. Yeah. Representative Huntley, is there anything you want to share?
No.
Mr. Chair, it must not have been good news.
Okay, any other questions of Mr. Berg's walkthrough? Okay, if not, then we'll go to the amendments. If the next one that I have on the list is an amendment by Representative Abler, an A86 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, I'd like to move the A86. And this is, there was some language about a different way to manage emergency medical assistance. Working with the department, they prefer their way, shockingly enough. And so this sets up an RFI process so they can actually try to do some research on a better way to do this. My idea is that they would do more data analytics and track the high users of emergency rooms in a way, try to get upstream and to try to minimize that, and with that savings, then find a way to turn it into some better care. So that's what the RFI is, and the department wrote the language pretty much. I did push them a little bit on the schedule, the August 1st date and November 1st date, and if they object, they can talk to me, but I think they can get this done. So I would urge your support.
Representative Huntley, any thoughts on
that? Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, I support this amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us that the A86 amendment be adopted. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. We now have the A100 amendment by Representative Mullery.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Basically, originally we had started off with a task force on homelessness, but that was going to cost a lot of money. And so we already have in law and funded an interagency council on homelessness. And there's some things that they had not, wasn't in the law that they should look at, and they believe in talking to them that they should be looking at these. So basically, the department is fine with this, and it won't cost any more money because they already have money to do the interagency council.
Okay, so the A100 amendment is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor? All Representative Huntley, excuse
Chair,
me. I sure we should get advice from the author.
Chair, I support this amendment.
Okay. Thank you for pointing that out. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We now have the A101. I think that was Representative Atkins, you withdrew that one, I think.
I did.
Yeah, okay. So, members, it was in your packet, so just set that one aside. We now go down to the A95 amendment.
Mr. Chair, that's
fine. And I don't have a name for. Representative Abler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a bit of a work in progress, but there's a problem in some of these complaints about vulnerable adults that they don't always get the entire spectrum of interviews. This requires an interview of at least a family member. There is a little thing we have to work on yet. Sometimes there's a bad family situation going on, and so we have to work out some language to modify this. But if we can put this on the bill, we'll get it cleaned up for the floor.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I would support this amendment, but it does need a little bit of work. There's a problem if some of the family members are involved with the, you know, taking money from vulnerable adults or whatnot, and that language I think needs to be cleared up so that the department can investigate complaints that involve the family.
Okay, any discussion from the committee members then? So you support the amendment?
Yes, I do.
Representative Huntley, as does obviously Representative Abler, is the maker of the amendment. So there's no further discussion. All those in favor of the amendment A95 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Now we have the A82 amendment. And the name I have on this one is Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I see Representative Horstein is not here to support me on this. But this has to do with the area agency on aging, and it's moving to a more centralized effort, and so this helps them do that. So, and it just makes sure that some of the details are handled as they make their shift to a more centralized, away from the county's methodology.
Okay, Representative Huntley.
I would, Mr. Chair, support this amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, the next amendment we have is the A105 amendment.
That's mine, Representative.
Yeah, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'd like to offer this amendment and talk about it a little bit. The A105 amendment comes out of a couple of issues. The overall topic is healthy homes and childhood lead poisoning. Members may know this. We had a bill that was in the committee. Didn't actually get a hearing, but we had this issue of childhood lead poisoning has come to a pretty critical level. The federal government has reduced all funding to our Minnesota Department of Public Health, and as it turns out, at the same time, they've strengthened the need, I guess, for childhood lead poisoning. They reduced the threshold from 0.10 micrograms per deciliter to 0.05 micrograms per deciliter of lead, which basically means there's more clear evidence, and the CDC said there should be 0 micrograms per deciliter. Children who are lead poisoned are children who are toddlers. This is a totally preventable toddler's disease that happens when little children are exposed to lead dust. And they need, their parents need information. Sometimes their house needs to be changed in some ways, different ways to take the lead out of the house or to keep it from being spread around. And with the change in the federal law, we now are going from like 650 kids in Minnesota to 3,300 children, toddlers, who should have interventions because they are being lead poisoned. And as I mentioned at the same time, the federal government has eliminated the funding. So this bill does a couple of different things. It provides money to the state health department to continue their surveillance system. I mean, one of the things that happens is doctors must report to the health department that a child is lead poisoned. That information then needs to get back to the parents. Department of Health needs some money to do that, to work with them. There's a new provision in here that deals with helping those families who have problems in their homes with mold, radon, kids with asthma, elders who are chipping and falling, kinds of information that can be education and training opportunities, and there's grants in here for that to help both nonprofits and our local public health departments to get some dollars to work on that. My understanding is that in the bill, some of the dollars were taken out of the existing lead grant to help pay for some of the surveillance at the health department. So I guess I'm interested in where the chairman is of this committee. We have had several discussions. I'm not sure where you finally are, Representative Pendley, but I'm hoping that we can put this in as a placeholder and figure out if there are more dollars that can come into your target so that we can fund it perhaps from the general fund. Right now it's funded from the Healthcare Access Fund, which I guess other SHIP dollars are. And I think I heard you say at the beginning of the meeting that there's an extra $5 million that came into your fund, maybe I don't know if it was today or recently. So I'm hoping that we can at least put this in as a placeholder and then see what we can do to make sure that we are not neglecting these little children and that we're making sure that our state health department and local public health officials have the tools they need to be able to deal with these issues.
You're talking about $5 million, Representative Clark, medical assistance with the corrections. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I heard him say that it had to do with SHIP. I don't know. Maybe I didn't hear correctly.
I just didn't know what $5 million you were talking about. So, Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, this would take money out of the Healthcare Access Fund for a project that the Healthcare Access Fund money has never been used for before. And I'm very concerned about protecting the Healthcare Access Fund, which has been dedicated in the past to supporting working people to get them health care, and number two, to support the state health improvement plan, and then some very minor items related to educating health care providers. And I just don't want to open the door where every good project is going to start looking at the Healthcare Access Fund as a place to be funded. If we do find some additional money as the session goes on, I'd be very interested in supporting Representative Clark's, but I'm not in favor of that at this time.
Okay, any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
I guess with that commitment, I would say that I will take it very seriously, Representative Huntley. And I'll withdraw the amendment. I really wanted the community to know about it. And I really, since this is a mandated function of our health department, I hope we can follow through. Thank you.
Okay. Amendment A-105 then is withdrawn. And now we go down to the A-106 amendment. And I had two names on that one, Representative Huntley, yours, and Enzel. I guess he's gone, so you'd be the A-106 amendment?
I would move the A-106 amendment, and Mr. Chair, there is there's a fund called Community Service Grants.
And what's that? Community Service Development.
And these are grants for capital improvements, remodeling programs, and other things for for-profit, not-for-profit organizations. In some cases, the money was not completely spent. And so what I want to do is transfer about $3.5 million out of this fund per year and essentially give that to long-term care facilities, which would be nursing homes and groups for the disabilities, so that their net COLA, if we pass this amendment, the nursing homes and long-term care facilities would get would go from a 2% COLA to a 3% COLA. And we, you know, we're taking money away from a good project, but my personal view is that we have cut the long-term care providers and nursing homes for so long that they're having huge turnovers of their staff, and that affects the quality of care that people get. Every individual in a nursing home or a long-term care facility for the disabled is an individual. They all have individual needs, and they all have special individual needs. And if the staff doesn't know these people as individuals, they're not going to get the kind of care we need. So I think it is extremely important for us to do whatever we can to increase the pay for people working in nursing homes and long-term care facilities. And on the one hand, it's a lot of money. On the other hand, in terms of their hourly pay, it's not a lot.
Okay, so Representative Huntley moves the A-106 amendment.
And just one final thing. This was a bill introduced by Representative Fritz, and she's not on this committee, so she couldn't offer it, but I'd like to thank her for bringing this to our attention.
Okay, so noted, and
And so 106-1.
A-106-1.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody's clear on that one then. And then we have Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like a little more information on where this money's coming from, this $3.5 million. My understanding is that's really coming from home-based nursing home services or long-term care facilities, and going to long-term care facilities. Is that right? I mean, are we kind of taking a preventative program where we can keep elderly folks in their own homes and taking that money out and giving it to our long-term care facilities? Is that a correct characterization?
Representative Huntley?
My understanding is that this COLA goes to nursing homes, it goes to long-term care facilities, and it also goes to home-based long-term care PCAs and so on that are working to keep people in their homes. So people that are on our waiver programs working in people's homes, either for the elderly or for disabled, would also get part of this COLA. So it's not just nursing homes that get this money.
So, Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. So explain to me where the money is coming from then.
Mr. Byrd.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, the community service development grants and community service grants were reduced in the last 2 years to a base, one was cut to zero in 2012, and they were cut to respectively $1,025,000 a year and $1,165,000 a year is the current year base. This would hold them to that base for each year, so they would not be cut, but they would not be increased. The base goes up to where it was prior to the last 2 years of cuts. What Representative Huntley's amendment does is it keeps the base at the current fiscal 13 level, where it was set by the 2011 funding bill, and then takes the difference that would increase the base and appropriates it to a nursing home increase.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, can you explain to me what the community service development grants do? Community service development grants do then? I mean, what is it we're taking money away from?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, the Department of Human Services grants table says that these grants are for capital improvements, remodeling, and programs for to for-profit and not-for-profit organizations and units of government to rebalance long-term health care service system, and grants for program expansion to nonprofit entities and units of government to rebalance the long-term care service system. That's the department's description of these two grant programs.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I didn't see this. This is probably posted. I just didn't see it before. I think Representative Woodard is on the right track. It's a worthy way to spend the money. I don't know if it's a good place to get it. This is the kind of, this is capital funding, so you can improve a day service facility or assisted living and like that. And so it's one of these kind of things you could vote for either. Either way you vote, it's going to be an ugly vote, and I don't think there's any roll call requested. But I, it's, this bill makes a few choices like that, and I'm not sure this is a good one. So it's a worthy cause, so members can vote how they like.
Hey, Representative Houseman?
Pass.
This is then the so we're clear the A106-1 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No. No.
Motion carried. We have an amendment, the A102 amendment, and the name I have for this one is Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little background, some reporters for the Star Tribune just won a Pulitzer Prize, I believe within the last week, for a story they did on investigation. We were very high on infant deaths in child care in Minnesota, and so the commissioner is stepping in and brought forth a lot of proposals. We worked a lot with the child care providers groups, and after a great number of changes, everybody ended up agreeing at our hearing yesterday, and it passed. And so there are all the different groups thankfully really worked and came together on this. It does a number of things. For instance, if there's really dangerous condition that they come across, they can order temporary immediate suspension. There doesn't have to be a death or a serious injury if it is apparent that something might occur there. A great change is on the second page is in Representative Fritz's bill, she had doctor. They want to change that to physician so that they're afraid doctor could mean a doctor of engineering or something. It gets into the type of bedding that you can have. And then on page three was the real fight. It took 2 hours in the Senate to discuss and 40 minutes in our committee on the exciting issue of swaddling, which I didn't understand until I had to spend about 4 hours on Sunday studying different ways and different recommendations on swaddling so that I could know what they were talking about. And the different groups all came together and agreed on the language on swaddling.
So are you going to define what that is for the committee?
Swaddling, it's a way of, you might say, bundling the infant. And you have to be very careful to leave the legs free so that you don't dysplasia of the hips. You have to have the arms within so that they don't come out and that they start moving around. But there, some say that you're supposed to allow them to still touch their hands to their face. Others say no. There is sleep sacks, which is what called is the one-piece sleeper. If you want to know how, there is recommendation by some medical groups on how to do blanket swaddling and how to lay them and how to fold the blanket and the wings. Mr. Chairman, do you
best member of the committee to do the research on this though?
If you really want to go on about swaddling,
I think we got the picture. Okay. I just after your 3 hours of work thought you might want to share what some of that was. Okay, Representative Mullery, on the rest of your amendment.
Wow. And we had the sudden infant death syndrome in the law. Now we're adding abusive head trauma and shaking and training on that. We got into diapering for alternatives to bleach as to what can and can't be used. It gets into sleep supervision, and at first it was that they must do certain things every 30 minutes and 15 minutes. Now it's a recommendation, and that was agreed to. And then the issue of monitoring is just encouraged. Originally there was a proposal to require liability insurance. That is changed to requiring notice of whether or not they have insurance to the parents and exactly what it is. There's various training for the providers, but there's also going to be training for the local licensing moderators so that we get a there's a lot of complaints that there's not a standard across the state, so that's going to be in there. We're changing the CPR training so that it's actually on infants. You don't get trained on an adult and without ever being trained on how to do it on an infant. SID Center will be involved in a lot of the training and forms, and and then there's training for how to manage behavior of infants, and basically that's it. We had 3.5 hours of hearings on it, and finally everybody is in agreement.
Okay, Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I support this amendment, and Representative Mueller is actually very correct. We had a relatively high rate of kids dying in daycare facilities. The press came out and got this attention, and the latest report we've got is that it's really dropped down just because of the public attention, so that's very good. But I have a question for Representative Mullery, and I have two children that are in their 40s. Do I have to learn how to swaddle them?
Representative
Mullery.
I forgot to say one thing about swaddling is you're not supposed to do it after the infant learns how to roll over. So if your children in their 40s have not learned how to roll over, then you can still swaddle them.
Okay. And any other comments? You support the amendment?
Yes, I do.
Questions? Representative Fulberg, Gabler, and then Clark. Representative Fulberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And were the family child care providers consulted with this?
Were they consulted? They were very involved. The association was there. Katie Chase, I believe, is the head of the association. Cindy Cunningham is very active in the Ramsey one and local metro ones. They were not only consulted, they were very active on it. They testified for a long time. We had them working with the department and them in front of us, and we came up with every amendment. We went down before our hearing yesterday and went over each amendment, and everybody agreed to those before we went through with them.
And Mr. Chair, what are the penalties to a parent that refuses to get a note from a doctor?
Representative
I have never heard that question from anybody, and I think I saw Mr. Kerber. Has that? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Could you ask Mr. I've never heard that question. And it was not brought up in 3.5 hours.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know what the fiscal. This seems like a pretty much straight up policy bill, and
no fiscal impact.
There was at one point. Wasn't this the one that did have a fiscal?
This one had $200,000, and we took out that. There was certain part of the training that had $200,000. We took that out.
And because we were at the absolute cap, perhaps I'm already took it out of this amendment. If you could identify yourself for the record, did you hear the question of Representative Holbert?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jerry Kerber. I'm from the Department of Human Services, where I'm the head of the Inspector General's Office, within which licensing exists. And I didn't quite hear the question. It was about a refusal for a doctor's order.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kerber, some of us believe that parents and child care workers will do the best thing for their children and shouldn't be required to have this process to go get a note from your doctor to decide and tell the child care provider how to safely care for your child. It just seems pretty intrusive of the state to mandate that out of a parent. I think the the education factor, certainly we've seen a huge drop off in these cases. The Star Tribune should be commended for their series on this issue, but I've been one that has always opposed requiring parents to go get a note from a pediatrician on how their child should be treated. And I'm wondering if a parent refuses to do that, are there any penalties or problems for the parent?
Mr. Chair,
before you comment,
I misspoke. Now I understand what you're talking about. There was testimony, and the Providers Association wanted that in there for the physicians to approve it. But Mr. Kerber has been involved with this forever.
Mr. Kerber.
or a lot of time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, the physician's statement is required if a provider and the parent want to have the infant sleep in an alternative position other than on its back. And so from our perspective, you know, all the research shows that the infant should be on its back. And in 75% of the infant deaths that we had, infants were in some kind of an unsafe sleep situation. So it's a very important thing. Our position is that if a parent wants it, it's still the parent's choice, but they are going to have to go to their physician and get that note of support to make sure the provider does it. But the consequence for the provider would be that they would be prohibited from having an infant sleep on its stomach unless they have a doctor's statement supporting that.
And Mr. Chair, if so, would there be any penalty? Is there any way that if a parent refuses to get the note, that there be any recourse to the parent?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, what we heard providers tell us, and not there are many different perspectives from providers, certainly, but one of the common answers to that was that providers then would be able to say more emphatically that I am not allowed to take your child under those conditions. I'm not allowed to treat your child that way. The regulations are very clear on this issue, and it's either a physician's statement or I'm not able to serve your child in the way you want to be served. So that would be the bottom line for the provider.
Can Representative Muller?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I was just going to... Yes, Mr. Chair, on that point is that the providers are very worried. The Providers Association studies the best methods, and they were very insistent that should be there. They want people to be following the best methods.
And Mr. Chair, again, to my point about the fact that this has no fiscal cost, is it moving separately in another bill? Or I'm not sure why it's being amended to an omnibus bill when there's no fiscal component.
I think the reason for that is that and maybe Representative Mullery can describe it, but it is a fast-breaking issue. Both he and the Chair, Representative Huntley, commented about the recent publicity dealing with infant deaths, and publicity in and of itself, I guess, has had a positive impact. But if you want to expand on why you'd like to have the amendment here, Representative Mullery, or if the Chair of the Human Service Committee wants to comment.
Mr. Chair and members, if I was a daycare provider and a parent asked me to put their kid to sleep in a position that the provider knows is unsafe, and there was no note from a doctor, I would think the daycare provider would be putting herself or himself up to a huge liability should that kid happen to die because of sleeping in the wrong position. So I don't know why any provider would do that unless they had a note from a doctor.
Representative Mullery, on the question of why a policy amendment at this point in time.
Well, Mr. Chair, the bill wasn't introduced. I got it on Friday, so it was introduced on Monday.
I commented it's a rather fast-breaking issue.
Oh, very.
That's what I mean. That's why it
totally.
Representative Mullery came forward with it after he had his 3.5-hour hearing, and we made a decision as long as it was revenue neutral, because they were at the absolute cap with the bill, so there wasn't, it would have had a fiscal impact had he kept that $200,000 in, but we simply didn't have the money with the target that was set at this point in time.
But Mr. Chair, if you can find $200,000, we'd love to complete the bill.
Then you'd make it fiscal, okay.
Well, we'd like it in.
Yeah, but Mr. Chair, I don't think it was a late-breaking issue. The series was done months, if not more than a year. I mean, it was done long enough ago that they got a Pulitzer Prize for it this week. Well, so I think that, you know, I don't know that.
What I mean, Representative Holbert, by a late-breaking issue is the bill was just introduced and he just had the hearing yesterday, I think.
I find out about this issue on Friday afternoon.
So within the legislature, late-breaking is what I mean, not that the news stories were late-breaking.
I'm sorry. I think it was Thursday.
Or Thursday, no, whatever.
It was one of those.
Whatever that timeline was. Mr. Kerber?
Mr. Chair, members, this initiative was part of the governor's proposed budget bill, and there were costs associated with it. I mean, there were some costs, the $200,000 that we've been talking about, but also there were some other costs in the bill related to grants that were going to help fund training for family child care providers. In the effort to remove those costs so that we could still get some safety initiatives adopted this year, because it's such an important issue, what we worked on really hard with Representative Mullery is to identify those areas that did have a cost and remove much of that. And so this is kind of the remainder. And so I think it's before you, hoping that, you know, with all the costs now stripped out, if it could possibly make it into the omnibus bill so that it can pass.
Okay, Representative.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, it gets really hard for people to track things around here when they don't move separately, and we have amendments show up less than 24 hours, and so I don't know if there's any value to moving that bill separately, or so people that are actually tracking the issue can know that it's actually moving and that it.
Mr. Chair, I see several people from the providers are here watching.
Okay, with Representative Abler.
Well, thank you. And just to give the back up a little bit, as Mr. Kerber mentioned, this was part of the governor's finance bill, and what I don't know is why he put so much policy in a finance bill, except there was a tiny bit of fiscal to it. And so, because it was in a finance bill, for some reason it didn't make it to the normal policy channels. And just note to the leadership, maybe when these governor's bills come out and there's a lot of policy, they should go through the policy process, not just get set right to finance. That would have averted this situation. What Representative Huntley did was, this was Article 3 of the governor's budget bill, and it was very controversial. There were work groups and so on, and there was a lot of work done, but not a consensus from the provider groups, and even within those groups they were splintered. And so what we did, I went to the revisor on Friday night, I think it was, or no, Thursday night or something, and with Article, and said, could you make this into a bill so you could have a hearing on it? And that's what Chair Mullery did. Mullery did a really good job of that, and they had a good process there. And so just so you know what you're buying here, though, there is no fiscal note because they took the department responsibility to training out. And so there's some duties without that would be done if there were money, but they can't do the duties. And so I think as this bill moves along, if it's funded, it will stay as it is. If it's not funded, I think probably should get a little bit smaller so that they're not given duties they can't do, or people aren't expected to know something they can't be trained about. I would suggest we adopt it today. I'm comfortable with that. I think people are watching this bill. They know it's moving. I think Mullery did as good a job as you can do given the time frame. The Back to Sleep campaign has been well vetted, and some of those things were wrapped around that a little bit. But that's my suggestion, and I know for my sake, if I get a lot of pushback from some specific things, I'll be arguing to take certain provisions out until they can become a consensus. But I think for what you got now, this is a pretty worthy start. And actually, because it was part of the finance bill in the first place, then it does actually belong in this bill for now. So thanks.
And I guess in one sense, I can say that when I met with Representative Huntley yesterday, and he identified the the amendment. I'm the one that basically made it pure policy by saying that Representative Huntley was at his target. There wasn't any money. And I said the only way it can move forward is if it were a policy bill. So,
what's that, Mr. Chair?
But it did start. Right. It did start out when we talked as a bill that did have fiscal implications.
And Mr. Chair, when I heard about it, I determined it had very strong policy in here, and it had to go to my committee. It came out of my committee with money in it. It had to come here.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah, so. We'll have you on the list. We have Representative Clark and then Nornes and Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This whole issue about the department being funded to provide some training for child care providers, I think, is a really important one. I had another piece of language that I didn't offer today that had to do with the department offering some training to a lot of our new immigrant families who are developing their own child care facilities, and they need assistance, and they need it from people who can help them understand the English language in some cases, and the department didn't feel they could absorb it. So if we move forward and we're able to fund some of the additional requirements that are in this bill, I hope we'll also talk about how we want to make sure that the department provides that training in languages that many of our new American families who are developing training child care centers can understand. They can follow the law carefully, and because they do understand it. So I just want to put that on the table along with Representative Mullery's possible funding for what he's got in his bill.
Okay, Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my only comment, or my first comment, would be that this is a large amendment, 12 pages worth. And I haven't heard a word from my provider, so I'm not sure they're aware of what we're doing here today. So that concerns me a little bit. The one thing, Representative Mullery, that is not in your bill, that as long as we're going this far, we should probably put it in there, that a plunger is not allowed in the bathroom of a child care center. Did you know that? So maybe you want to consider another amendment to your amendment. It seems like you need it in a bathroom, not in the kitchen. So that's my only comment.
Is that right?
That's a new weapon.
Mr. Chair, that seems so bizarre. Right? Mr. Chair, I'm only pointing out that that's one regulation right now that when you talk to providers doesn't make any sense. The plunger is needed in a bathroom. And when you're not allowed to have it in there, it seems like another regulation that we should probably
Mr.
correct.
Chair, if Representative Dornes wants to put in a bill for that, definitely guarantee I'm hearing on plungers in the bathroom.
Can we have Representative Mariani next?
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment on, and I appreciate Representative Hobart's queries as a policy chair, and I think Representative Mullery, you've handled this well. I think as a policy chair, as quickly as you were made aware, you moved forward with an important piece of direction, for our providers here. But, I mean, my comment is more for the executive branch. I mean, this is a good example in terms of process-wise why these policy provisions need to be in policy bills, and they need to come from the executive branch in that way, and not just bury them inside finance bills. And, we've had a few issues in our education stream, on this. I suspect other members and other streams can speak to that issue. So that's not a reflection of us in terms of how we process our work here as much as it's a reflection of the executive branch's not always handling, important legislation in a way that aligns with how we structure our work here at the legislature.
Good point. Any further discussion on the amendment to the A-102? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. That's all of the amendments that we had. So any discussion on the bill? Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the bill. As always, it's pretty cool to have an omnibus bill with five spreadsheets. There actually are some more we didn't have here, the healthcare access fund detail, and Anyway, so it's I'm pretty proud of that, Mr. Chair. It's, most bills don't have five spreadsheets. But I just want to offer a comment to some of the decisions made, and then how we wind up where we're at. Nobody in this arena that's in this room expected to see a minus target coming out in this area. It's my speculation that had the election not changed our roles, that there would be a target we would hit without having to reach this number, would be my expectation. And that's a choice you made as leaders. What that's done to you is you put yourself in a situation where you have to make some pretty poor choices for how to get some money. And every alternate source of revenue that is in this bill has a consequence. The hospital surcharge is not free money. There's $18 million coming out of the hospital system in the biennium, but there are winners and there are losers. You'll be hearing about that. I just want to caution you so you know what you've done when you put a target of minus 150 on this area. The HMO reserves don't come out of the sky, and they will have an impact. And if you take a reserve away, if you even can afford it without going out of business, then you're going to see actually an increase in some costs later on. Cost shifts to the counties, and I participate in that myself. Sometimes it's for a purpose. Sometimes we do need to move lagging counties along to do the right thing about placement of people out of the institutions. And sometimes we just do it because it's handy. And there's a number of those here. One thing that didn't come up is one of the things that was done to create housing money was to take away county job training. In the TANF department at the workforce centers and eligibility for medical assistance and emergency assistance. And so a good thing was done at the expense of another thing that many people in this committee would not want me to reduce. And so just to caution you about what's in here. And we just sat here now where we raised the COLA while we reduced funding to fix up capital improvements on day services, the elderly waiver, and community resources. You would all have said we should do more community resources. And so it was a choice that was made. I don't know what the future of this bill is going to be. This is a really, really important area, and I'm committed to it. I'm going to vote for this bill today and all the way through the process. I think that it's unfair to the interests represented in this room and that are funded by these programs that a group can raise over $2.5 billion and find its proper to remove $150 million out of an area like this. This area is not out of control growth. This area has, the growth is now sustainable and reasonable in this area. In the 12-13 budget coming into it, the proposed growth was 22% over the biennium, or about 7 or 8% a year, which is a lot. The proposed growth in this area for this biennium, as a result of the work we did, some very challenging and most difficult, and you all shared that. I think everybody at this table was part of watching that and suffering through it, was 6.9% for the biennium, 2.3%. And that includes growth in the population growth, includes very little increase in COLAs, et cetera. And so the target for this area, the budget area growth in this area was $743 million this time compared to $2.2 billion. Just to tell you, the growth in K-12 was $795 million in the forecast. For the first time, probably, more growth in that area than in human service for probably since anybody can remember. And so this is the beginning of a process. Decisions will be made and remade about where the focus needs to be. And Chair Huntley did the best he could do. He was given an assignment, and I commend him for his efforts and his perseverance. This is a decision made by a group outside this room. But I want to caution you as you go forward with some of the choices you're making. You may not like the outcome of it, but every choice you make takes from somewhere as a consequence. And we can discuss the consequences of taxes or not. But this bill already has all the consequences of $2.5 billion in taxes into it. So at that, I just wanted to, I hope I don't sound too chastising. I'm just trying to offer observations of a member trying to solve a problem and make this area work as well as it can be for a million people as we spend about probably $27 billion in the biennium. And the Senate has even a deeper target. and this will go through a process, and that'll be interesting. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler, I don't want to get into a debate of K-12 and Health and Human Services, but I did ask Mr. Marks to... What did you say K-12 went up?
795 in the forecast. 795 million compared to 742.
This one, by memory, I was thinking 702, but you said 743.
743.
This one went up 743 under the February forecast. I think those of you on the committee understand that about 600 million of that roughly was medical assistance. The growth there was the lion's share of it, as I understand it. But I'm just curious when you compare the two, because my recollection wasn't that K-12 went up that much. We got a couple of
Mr. Chair.
We can revert back to that. Just perked my own curiosity.
Well, I'll say one thing else, then I'll be done talking for the day. That's not to criticize K-12, but people have called this the out-of-growth area. It's exponential. At one point, it was. The $2 billion per biennium growth is a lot. But 743 is actually a number that actually is sustainable. We can make choices at that point. But just one thing else I wanted to mention is just in one area, the emergency medical assistance area, we reduced that in our budgeting because that was growing at 10% a year and is way off. I reduced 40% in my budget projections for about $40 million in the biennium. It turns out that the true savings was $60 million in the biennium. And so $20 million beyond what I was told that we would save by doing that. And that money went to the school shift. And so $20 million that I would have rather have spent in this budget, which would have solved some of the problems Chair Huntley inherited, were because of a wrong estimate. $20 million. And if you look at how carefully we spend $20 million now, appreciating the value of that, that's just a frustration I wanted to tell you that. And we have no control. The department makes its best estimates. But when the real numbers come in, some of the things we had to do, we didn't have to do. And I have some remorse about that, but I can't control the fiscal note process. But I just, thanks, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your attention to it.
Okay, we have a couple of other people, and one of the things that when we compare K-12 and Health and Human Services, however, we have to keep in mind that part of those numbers might include shift payment, which was money owed the school districts. But we'll see what the numbers. I'm just curious myself how they...
Oh, yeah. I'm glad I peaked your interest.
I'm not disputing your number. I'm just, I'm a bit surprised by it. But that big a number might include the school shift payments.
No, it doesn't.
We'll see. Representative Dittmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Huntley, look around the chair here. I noticed in your report here that, I know the Teen Challenge has been a very successful program for our state for chemical abuse. And you repealed the increases. What are we talking about? What kind of money are we talking about there in repealing the increases for Teen Challenge? I know Teen Challenge has been one of the state's most successful program for chemical abuse for adult and for young adults.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dittmer, I'm the one that actually got that increase in there last year, or the year before. So this, as Representative Abler pointed out, I had to make try to find the least bad change. And while I support Teen Challenge, I think they do a good job, and they have very good statistics. I actually have a big facility in Duluth. So I do support that program. I think they do a great job. I just had to find money someplace. So I took it away. They're still getting what they were getting, but they won't get the increase.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, would you say that they're probably the most successful treatment program we have going in our state right now?
I don't know. We certainly, and it gets back to my view that everybody is different. You know, what one program works for one set of people may not work for another group of people. But they do have a good job, and I've talked to another legislator that had a son going through this particular procedure, and after, you know, many years of addiction. And one of the unusual things about Teen Challenge is most of these programs are like 30 days. And many of the people who get into Teen Challenge have been through the 30-day programs five or six or seven times. And this representative was telling me about her son that he was there about 6 months at Teen Challenge, and suddenly things started to change. And it looks very good for him. So I think it is a very good program.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know, just looking at some of the statistics for Teen Challenge, you know, they have a 74% graduation rate and success rate after 6 months. And then 62% of the graduates report no relapses, for many times. It's one of the most successful programs that I've seen, and I've been to some of their events, and hopefully maybe you can, before we're done here, that you can reinstate that increase for them. Thank you.
Yeah, I have Representative Brainerd is next, but Mr. Marks is right. There's two ways you can calculate the K-12 number, and that's what I was referring to, with or without the shift. So I'm just going to ask Mr. Marks to explain that. It's not that either number is incorrect, it's just put the way you calculate it.
Mr. Chair, members, if for the K-12 appropriations, comparing fiscal 2012 and 13, or the current biennium, to fiscal 14-15 base level, without a shift adjustment, so no adjustments either way on the shift, the appropriations growing $797 million, or 5.5%, between the two biennia. If the shifts are built in, and the big thing here would be that we are repaying education shifts in the current biennium, fiscal 13, then the appropriation is actually decreasing $322 million, or 2.1% between the two biennia.
Everybody follow that? Okay, Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a relatively small item in the budget, but I wanted to, I think I would be doing a disservice to my county if I didn't speak up about it, since I'm from one of what Representative Abler called the lagging counties that might appropriately be reprimanded through this county share of cost care. It's the Minnesota Security Hospital in the Nicollet Blue Earth County, you know, and I've obviously heard from my county. I don't have expertise to address this in detail, but you probably heard it in committee too. But I think the concern I understand is the cost share as itself is kind of a stick in the process, and I think our county feels a need for some other elements on both sides here, because they've been working on this issue, and they think there's issues around the timeliness of identification and the communication between the security hospital and the county, you know, so transitions can be planned for and occur, and they're concerned that there are some policy pieces that might help this kind of planning and transition go much more smoothly. So I'm only asking that maybe those things could be looked at in connection with the cost, because the cost in itself, the cost share in itself is punitive. And I think, and certainly, I don't know about other counties implicated, but I know our county has been working on this and would like to do a better job, but they feel they need some better tools.
Mr. Chair and Representative Brainerd, this is an area that we need a lot of understanding of. And if you read the legislative auditor's report about state-operated services, and a lot of it had to do with the security prison, yeah. Hospital. they're not getting the kind of care that they need right now, and we're getting under the Olmstead decision by the Supreme Court that was not just related to the sexual predator problem, that was related also to people in the security hospital. And we're basically under court order to figure out a way to move these people to the less restrictive environment that we can do. And again, I have a choice between bad decisions in this bill. But what we did is we've simply delayed the increase in money that the governor had projected, and that we will do it in the next biennium.
Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I won't, some of this is our policy issues, but what I would say is I understand the situation we're in with regard to the security hospital, but it's a lot of issues around that are state issues, and we ought not to punish one or two counties for some issues that we could facilitate at the state level in a more productive manner. And I think that's what my county is asking for, is to be helped to put in place the policy pieces that would help them do timely transition. So they really want to cooperate, but they don't just want to have the stick. They want some other policy help with this. So that's all I'm asking for.
Okay. Representative Huntley renews his motion that House File 1233, first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion carried. Tomorrow we meet. Go into session. They are going to recess, so we're on the original script that we were on today, which means that we would meet at approximately 10:30. If it's different, I'll announce that on the House floor, but at this point, the plan on 10:30. The reason that there was some changes today was the Rules Committee ended up meeting with during that time period when we were meeting. It just didn't work out. And we will have tomorrow higher ed, K-12, and safe schools. So there will be three bills up tomorrow. With that,
what was it?
No further business, meeting adjourned.